This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
In late March 2017, DIA organized its first ever DIA BioVenture Day in Glasgow, a new platform designed to connect stakeholders critical to the success of bioventures and designed to investigate if the current bioventure paradigm delivers equitable return for patients, investors, and healthcare systems in Europe. I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of DIA's Global Forum. Today, I'm speaking with the founder of the Melanoma Patient Network Europe, Bettina Rühl. Bettina provided the patient perspective in one of our BioVenture Day sessions. Thank you for joining us today, Bettina, and welcome. You provided the patient view in the panel discussion entitled Immuno-Oncology, Therapeutic Breakthrough Area or Nightmare for Healthcare Funding at this first DIA BioVenture Day. What is your view?
So as you just so kindly said, I am the founder of the Melanoma Patient Network Europe, and melanoma is probably the disease where immune therapy or immuno-oncology has made the biggest change and the biggest turnaround for patients. I personally lost my husband to melanoma, and unfortunately for him, it didn't work, but he was diagnosed at a time when the new immuno-oncology drugs just hit the market. Since then, melanoma as a disease has completely changed, and we move from one with no hope and a disease full of despair where patients had a median survival between 6 and 9 months after being diagnosed as stage 4 to one where we all of a sudden have survivors and we are honestly discussing the possibility of a cure. So for us, this has been a time of great hope, but at the same time, I think we all know that this is a particular class of drugs. First, they are new, and being the first is both exciting, but you, of course, also have to go through all the teething problems. This class of, well, especially focused now on checkpoint inhibitors, has a totally different mode of action of what one is usually exposed to in cancer, like chemotherapy. I don't think that anyone was really prepared of how these new drugs would work, starting from what is a dose that we have to take. There is no clear correlation between dose and response or dose and side effects. The response to treatment does not kick in immediately, but there is a delay, which made it very, very difficult, especially at the beginning, to even decide whether a patient was responding, yes or no. Then another effect, like pseudoprogression, that it looked like tumors were progressing. Some might actually progress, but then all of a sudden patient has later response. We're really difficult in terms of clinical trial design for patients to stay on trials. We have these cases where people were taken off trials for progression and sent home basically with the idea that they would be dying. Well, they called in a year later and were still alive. And this is something I think none of us had expected or prepared for. At the same time, unfortunately, these drugs don't work for all patients. The first checkpoint inhibitor only worked for about a third of them. And still today, we don't know who is the responder and who is not. And at the same time, the ones who do respond usually derive great benefit. So it's a small group of patients that derives great benefit, while the majority does not work, that does not benefit. On top of that, it was a first in class, it was a desperate disease, so the price tag that came attached with these medicines was extremely high, effectively preventing access for many of our patients. In a disease where you see young patients usually, my husband died 2 weeks after his 37th birthday, and we're pretty average in that, unfortunately. But I think that kind of big picture of where the hope and the desperations and the difficulties in the process for us came on, and this is how we as MPNE got interested in the process of innovation and how do we get to these new therapies. And now in the next step, how do we actually make them accessible for our patients? Because the drug that is just sitting on a shelf but that we cannot access is as good as non-existent to patients.
And the lack of access by patients is due, in your view, to pricing or reimbursement schemes that do not make the drugs available to patients who need them?
It is fair to say that the high prices present an effective barrier to access. Whether one wants to argue that the prices are justified in terms of our current incentive system and that healthcare systems are not able to keep up with that, or whether the prices are simply too high, remains to be seen and is, I think, open for discussion. But the bottom line for us is that healthcare systems today are either not willing or not able or a mixture of both to make these drugs accessible for patients. And this is what we're seeing.
Do you have a recommendation for a way forward to resolve this dilemma, this tension?
Well, I guess the person who has an answer to that question is in for the Nobel Prize for Economics. But I would say that, for example, the first checkpoint inhibitor would have been a classic model for a pay-per-performance scheme. However, a healthcare system or a country needs a system in place like the Italians do, with a registry that adequately captures patient outcomes, so that you only pay for patients where the drug actually works. So a pay-per-performance scheme is nice in theory, sounds very good to advocate for, but we've seen that it's actually not so easy to implement. So I think we would have liked to see more innovative alternative reimbursement schemes at the beginning, because the time that we're spent on discussing and negotiating prices was time where we saw our people die. So delay is paid for with lives of patients like melanoma patients. So something has to change in that respect. At the same time, I think we all have to wake up that we cannot simply turn an entire population in terms of personalized medicine into orphan diseases and expect to be paying orphan drug prices for all of them, because no healthcare system will be able to stomach that. So I think we as society, and that includes all stakeholders, have to seriously rethink how we incentivize and how do we finance innovation for our countries, for our patients, and how do we keep the process ticking, because simply cutting back on budgets is not going to keep innovation alive. I wish I had an answer, but unfortunately, no.
In this panel discussion in Glasgow, what was the most surprising or maybe even controversial point raised during the discussion, and what was your reaction to it?
Well, I think over time we have moved out a bit of controversy, because my husband died in 2012 and I moved into advocacy later on. When I started, discussing something like drug prices was the big no. That was something where any discussion, any conversation would just stop, especially industry point blankly refused to even comment. That has totally changed. I believe if there's something that is remarkable today is that every stakeholder, and that includes industry, but as well payers, it also includes patients and HTA bodies and regulators, have understood that we need to change the system. We're working in it, and that it has to be in a way that fulfills everyone's needs. So it's not about picking the bad guy in the room and pushing blame around, but we really have to move to something constructive. And I thought that the discussion was quite helpful, or that also the discussion previously had been quite helpful, to someone have an investor sitting in the room who just says, well, why should I finance that? So I think it is time for a reality check. It's not really controversial anymore, and I'm rather relieved to see that we're moving into a more constructive approach. Because in the end, for patients, what matters are outcomes. For us, it's people who live, and this we have to achieve. I think that is that was, for me, noticeable.
So you're suggesting or stating that, in fact, in the last 5 years, the conversation has changed quite drastically from this topic being essentially ignored to being front and center in discussions around medicines, reimbursement, and patient access. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely, that is correct.
What is the greatest challenge from the standpoint of patient advocates in contributing to the drug development process?
Well, first one starts from a point of being personally affected. So we are already the ones with the back against the wall. So this is never a good position to start negotiating, because your own life is at stake. So I think that's something to understand firsthand. At the same time, if we are not the ones who can put under pressure on a system to demand solutions, then who can? Because we are the ones who pay the ultimate price if it's not working, and that is usually paid for in life. Once one gets involved or starts somewhere, however, it becomes clear very fast, actually, how complicated and how complex the system is. While it is easy to pick a bad or a culprit, it is not so easy to fix the system, and it's not that no one else hasn't been trying. So I think for people who don't have, or even people with a background in one of the many fields involved, this is a highly complex system, and I'm not sure there is an easy answer out. So I actually expect some type of compromise that in the end will probably feel lame and lukewarm to every party involved. I don't think that this will have an easy solution. And to understand that, and also to understand the timeframes and the constraints involved, and that is challenging from a patient advocacy perspective. So I've been spending the best part of my last 2 years, 2.5 years, on it. I do think it's just the sheer complexity is the biggest challenge for us.
When people talk about drug development, they sometimes mean what happens before regulatory approval. In market access, it's what happens after regulatory approval. Is there a way that patients can get involved in drug development prior to regulatory approval in ways that are meaningful for the patient and for the time when the medicine does become available to them? Would patient advocates want to be involved in designing drug development or informing it in some way?
Well, I think at first it is fair to say that there is no such a thing as patients or patient advocates. We are a very heterogeneous group, and people mostly enter patient advocacy for a very personal concern. And as concerns are diverse, so are motivations, and so are the activities that people engage in. And you will find people who will be very interested in these processes, and who are absolutely willing to train themselves in order to participate, while others will find that this is totally beyond themselves, or they simply have no interest in it, which I think is equally fair to say. So it will only be a part of patient advocates who would be interested. If you look, for example, at EUPATI, the European Academy for Therapeutical Innovation, they were entirely oversubscribed. They could only train 100 European patient advocates, but there were many more who wanted to take this 14-month training course to train just in that research and development and how to engage in the process. So I do believe that the interest and the drive is definitely there. But as the process is complex and just without understanding the process, real involvement will not be possible. I think this is the first important hurdle. Of course, it does help if you have a relevant background. So I have a medical background and have then done a PhD in molecular biology. And that obviously helps to understand how these processes work. But imagine you're an engineer, then you will probably have it easier on the statistics side, but you might not be so familiar with how medicines work. So I think the challenge is the sheer level of knowledge that one needs to even get started. But obviously for us, from a strategic point of view, getting involved early in development, this is exactly where we want to be. So classic industry comes to patient groups when something is not working with a trial, namely they don't recruit or retention rates are lousy. This is usually when they come, and this is obviously far too late. And it is usually equally obvious that when you look at the clinical trial protocol that you see the design faults. And that is, of course, first, highly frustrating for patients who try to enter that trial. Secondly, it's an utter waste of resources. And thirdly, the time, of course, keeps ticking for us. In a disease where patients die fast, waste of time is as bad or is one of the worst things that we've witnessed. So for us, obviously, being involved early in the process makes total sense.
It is often said these days that in the past, industry paid relatively little attention to patients' concerns when developing a new medicine. And it is now stated that the industry is paying more attention, and so are regulators. From the patient's point of view, from your point of view, do you see a difference in the attitudes of companies and regulators in relation to bringing the patient voice into the design of drug development?
Well, at first, I think it is fair to say that industry pays in particular attention to their shareholders above all, and patients somewhere figure on the sidelines. So while people individually surely care about patients, and I've seen that over and over again, I think one should not forget that this is a profit-generating business. At the same time, the demands of patients in terms of more general civic participation have increased. So it is not that patients now today wait to be invited, but people will demand to be involved in the process. To the degree that regulators and now increasingly also HTA bodies and even payers incorporate patient preferences, industry is obviously interested in doing the same, because how do you want to prepare for an evaluation process if you don't know by which criteria you will be evaluated? So I believe it is part of a general overall trend that patients demand an active say in their own care, and that affects all stakeholders across. By the way, everyone struggles to the same degree how to do this properly and how to do this well. So I think the methodology, we still all have to work on the methodology, how to meaningfully and constructively and correctly involve patients. And correctly, I mean in the sense that there is no such a thing as a single patient perspective, effectively. Patients are a heterogeneous group, and perspectives and preferences within that group will naturally scatter. And that's not a problem. It doesn't mean that patients don't know what they want. It just means that there is a natural scatter of opinions. And I think we, in terms of methodology, have to learn how to deal with that more effectively. At the moment, patient involvement is often that other stakeholders would like to have one person joining the table, and that person is then supposed to represent all patients under all circumstances. And just the concept is obviously already extremely naive. If you take diseases across, you can start from Alzheimer's and then end with cancer, and these conditions are very different from each other. And just because you have experienced one doesn't mean that you're able to comment or adequately judge the next condition. So I am even not a patient, I was a carer. So I am already quite careful with what I say about what melanoma patients want, because we have seen in first preliminary results that carers and patients actually differ in their perceptions when it comes to acceptable risk and benefits. So I think it is about getting the granularity right and understand how patient populations think in order to come to decisions that are truly meaningful for that patient group then afterwards.
So going forward, what do you recommend the patient advocates and their representatives or maybe their carers do to become more effectively engaged in the drug development process and, frankly, patient access to medicines? What specific actions do you recommend?
From my side, there is no shortcut to knowledge. So if we seriously want to be involved, then we will have to put in the time and the effort and the hours in order to come to a knowledge level that is adequate to interact or with this process. So that's the first line. That is something we have to tackle. At the same time, if society or other stakeholders believe that patient engagement is meaningful and important, they also have to recognize that this is impossible without the adequate training. And training also obviously also means resources. One cannot expect people to do just this just in their evenings and in their weekends. This is just humanly impossible. So that's the first thing.
You say training. To do what?
As I mentioned earlier on, the UPATI training module, that is a 14-month training course. This is quite hard if you have to do this on top of a full-time job and being a patient. And the course does not run by itself. This was an IMI-funded project, and they really struggled to have continued funding afterwards.
Training in what exactly?
It is really a basic training in research and development. So it is basically about how medicines are developed. It includes like the clinical side, but also the regulatory aspects of it. It had a basic introduction to health technology assessment because it was a European course, of course, that could not be country specific. As we all know, HTA processes are country specific. So this course could not deliver. The entire program is available as open source material online. So if you want, you can download it and install it in your own platform and educate yourself. There's a shorter toolbox available, which is a glossary and has the technical terms explained. But this was really a proper training program. This was for 100 European patient advocates to really train them in how medicines are developed. And I think this is to the level we have to push it if we want to be taken seriously.
Does this include training on how to be a patient advocate and how to advocate for patient interests? Is that included in the training that you just described?
I don't think so. In a way, it is understood by the fact that this is a multi-stakeholder initiative and the stakeholders involved in the process had already interest to involve patients. So there was already an exchange in which aspect one can get involved. But this actually brings me to the second point of what I think what patient advocates have to learn is. It is not about waiting to be invited. For me, it matters that we have to understand that we are part of society, we are citizens, we are taxpayers. If this process is not delivering what we want, despite claiming to act in our best interest, then it is our responsibility and our duty to do something about it. Again and again, I'm rather surprised that this is even not unwelcome. But, of course, one has to know how the system works and be able to make constructive suggestions. Just standing there and complaining has never helped. So I believe it is about understanding the issues and being able to, work and contribute to constructive solutions that help everyone. We have, for example, in my own network, we have done work on quality of life measurements where we've seen issue with these. We've done a pilot project with the EMA on risk, how to measure risk and benefits in different patient populations. So we are now continuing that work. So there is definitely interest for this type of engagement.
Would you say that there is no better time than the present to advance the cause of patients in relation to the development and use of medicines?
Well, I don't know what the future holds, but yes, I would definitely say so.
Thank you very much for joining us today, Bettina, for speaking with us. We appreciate all your insights and passion.
It was my pleasure.
For DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.